Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, December 18th, 2023. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All materials heard on IRIS are intended solely for the use of folks with print disabilities. So looking at the front page of Monday's Dubuque Telegraph Herald, we've got three main stories. Area agricultural land values cooling. Couple discovers a whole new world through marriage, and Dubuque store caters to nerds. So we'll start with the agricultural story. Area agricultural land values, quote, cooling. Most counties' land values rose less than 3% in 2023, compared to more than 16% from 2021 to 2022. This is by John Cruz of the TH Media. The value of agricultural land in Iowa continued to rise in 2023, according to a recent state survey. However, that increase was relatively small compared to that of previous years, and some agricultural experts say that leveling could indicate agricultural land values might soon begin to drop. The survey, released by the Center for Agricultural and Rural Development at Iowa State University, found that agricultural land values in Dubuque, Delaware, Jackson, and Clayton counties increased 0.5% to 3.2% from the year prior, while in nearby Jones County, agricultural land values decreased by about 1.6%. That's dramatically different from the spike in land values that occurred from 2021 to 2022. Values in those Iowa counties rose 16% to 19%, even smaller than the 32% to 36% increase in agricultural land valuation those five counties experienced from 2020 to 2021. Quote, if you take a look at inflation, that has exacerbated everything, said Larry Tranel, that's T-R-A-N-E-L, who is a dairy specialist at the Dubuque County Office of Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Quote, there are predictions of it cooling off even more, unquote. The breakdown of the value for an acre of local land in 2023 was, and then here's some bullets. First one, Dubuque County values rose by 2.5% to an average price of $12,659 per acre. Delaware County values rose by 2.3% to an average value of $13,924 per acre. Jackson County values rose by 0.5% to an average value of $11,158 per acre. Clayton County values rose by 3.2%. Average there is $10,923 per acre. And Jones County values decreased by 1.6% to an average of $11,801 per acre. The survey, compiled by Rabail Chandio, who is an assistant professor and extension economist at Iowa State University, attributes the cooling of agricultural land values primarily to a combination of interest rate hikes, lower crop prices, and higher input costs for growing those crops. He said while limited land supply and strong crop yields continued to boost the value of agricultural land in Iowa, it was not enough to negate the overall economic slowdown being experienced across the U.S. Chad Hart, professor and extension economist for Iowa State University, said recent agricultural land survey data indicates that farmland values across Iowa might decrease next year for the first time since 2015. Quote, the majority of experts in the field are seeing some sort of decline in the future, Hart said. It will be likely small, probably less than a 5% decrease. Hart added that demand for Iowa's agricultural land remains high and it moves quickly. Existing farmers are interested in taking their record incomes and reinvesting it in new dirt. At the same time, new producers want to secure their own plots and start their own agricultural enterprises, and investors outside the state also want to stake claim on the farmland that typically is seen as a wise investment. That strong demand remains one of the primary factors for agricultural land values continued growth, the survey says, which Hart said can prove to be good news for established farmers and bad news for young people waiting for land prices to drop. It's really hard for a beginning farmer to compete for that land, he said. As the cost of Iowa's farmland nears a potential plateau, Hart said the state's agricultural industry remains healthy as farmland continues to be sold at record high prices and farm revenues remain strong. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported in November that 2023 net farm income in the U.S. is expected to total $151.1 billion. That's a 17.3% decrease from the record high of $182.8 billion recorded in 2022. Even with that decline, though, the estimated net farm income for 2023 still would sit at 31.4%. Would sit at 31.4% above the 20-year average. Quote, farm incomes are still above average, even if they're not above that record level anymore, said Hart. Ag is still a positive factor toward growth in Iowa. Our next story, Dubuque store caters to, quote, nerds. And it shows a photo of a woman in a store standing behind the counter. And the caption says, Stacy Powell is the owner of Angry Fox, a new store located in Dubuque's Kennedy Mall. A new store has opened in Dubuque's Kennedy Mall, focusing on international collectible items. Angry Fox recently opened in the mall between Captured on Canvas and the Tech Corner. The store sells plush toys, figurines, mock swords, and various other Asian and anime-themed collectibles. The Dubuque storefront is owner Stacy Powell's second physical Angry Fox location, the first operating in Janesville, Wisconsin. Powell also travels around the country selling goods at conventions and trade shows. We definitely wanted to bring some of that fandom excitement to Dubuque, she said. There's already a really good community here for that market, and we just want to expand on that and offer some different choices. Powell said her goal with Angry Fox is to provide a welcoming gathering place for Dubuque's nerd community. The store shelves are filled with items related to familiar classics such as Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon, but she also has merchandise from more recent hits such as the Japanese manga and animated tiered TV series Jujutsu Kaisen. For more casual shoppers, the store also offers a variety of snacks, decorations, and plush animals. Some of this stuff used to be more obscure, even the things really well known now, like the TV show Sailor Moon, Powell said. But with the internet making us so much more connected, you can enjoy things from all over the world. Between 80 and 90% of the store's merchandise is imported directly from Japan, Powell said, so products are rotated frequently. She works directly with suppliers abroad to stay ahead of trends and ensure there is always something new for shoppers. The Dubuque store is currently about half full as Powell works to fill it, but the entire store soon will sport the international goods. I want to offer this all in a very inclusive way, Powell said. Some of the coolest people in my life are people I met selling at the store or in shows. And Angry Fox is at the Kennedy Mall. It's open from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday. And additional information about merchandise can be found on its Facebook page, Angry Fox. In the third story from the front page in the Love That Lasts series, which is a continuing series highlighting tri-state couples that were married 50 plus years. This one is Couple Discovers a Whole New World Through Marriage. Growing up in Battle Creek, Michigan, Dave Roberts was aware that the world around him was very white. I think there was one black kid on our football team, Dave, now 85, said. After earning bachelor's and master's degrees in both political science and history from Western Michigan University, Dave took a hard look at what his next step would be. I decided that Michigan was a small world, and I needed to experience something beyond that, he said. He accepted a position as a professor at Savannah State College, which is now called Savannah State University in Georgia, where Vivian McMillan, a Savannah native, had just finished her sophomore year. "Dave came in as our new teacher," said Vivian Roberts, now 77. "Our student body was almost 100% black, but our faculty was integrated, so he got noticed. And he liked me long before I was even aware of it. But he did not ask me out until after graduation. It would have been against the rules for any professor to date a student." Dave knew that Vivian was something special. She was a serious scholar, and she was as beautiful as she was talented. They were soon a couple, and after graduating with a degree in mathematics, Vivian took the federal civil service exam and was offered a position in the U.S. Navy, where she trained as a computer programmer. The job meant a move to Washington, D.C. for Vivian, while Dave would stay in Savannah to teach. It was an eye-opening experience for Vivian, who had lived all of her life in the Deep South. "To me, the world was black and white," she said. "There were two views. I didn't know anything else existed. But in D.C., black people were from a lot of different places, and some of my teachers were from Ireland. White, but different. It was then that I realized how big the world is, and all the wonderful people in it, and that was good for me." The couple married in D.C. November 10, 1967, and recently celebrated their 56th anniversary. They have three children, Dave Jr., Lynn Marzen, and Stefan. They also have four grandchildren and one great-grandson. Lynn, of Cedar Rapids, is a teacher, like her father. She said she knows how courageous it was for her parents to get married. "Interracial marriage was illegal in Georgia until right before they got married," she said. "They were taking a risk going back to Georgia. They were really brave." After their wedding, Dave returned to Savannah, and Vivian soon followed, after being transferred to nearby Hunter Airfield. "Back in those days, the woman followed her husband," Vivian said. "So I moved from the Navy to the Army and got transferred back to Georgia." After a short stint teaching at the University of Indiana, Dave was hired as a political science professor at the University of Dubuque. The couple, who by then had Dave Jr., moved to faculty housing on the campus in 1969. A few years later, they moved to a home near Dubuque Senior High School. Vivian, knowing the uneasy racial climate in Dubuque at the time, was a bit nervous about leaving the relative safety of the faculty housing. "We'd been living on campus and we felt safe there," she said. "We had a circle of friends from all over the world. This was stepping into the unknown. I had the attitude that we'd just do our thing and nobody would bother us." To Vivian's surprise and delight, the neighborhood embraced the Roberts family. They lived on Decorah Street for 30 years before moving to their condo on the West End, where they have been since 1999. "We had block parties and gatherings, and we were included right from the beginning," she said. "There were neighbors we would tell the kids to go to if they needed help, and we weren't there." After moving to Dubuque, Vivian became a stay-at-home mom for several years, then went to work for Cigna Retirement Group as a corporate trainer, a job she continued with Prudential Retirement Group when it bought Cigna's retirement division. She retired in 2011. Dave taught at UD for 30 years, retiring in 1999. He continued teaching as a member of the adjunct faculty at UD and other area colleges for several years after his official retirement. One of Lynn's fondest memories is of her father telling stories around the campfire. "Dad would get a fire going in the side yard," she said. "He would tell ghost stories with us and all of the neighborhood kids gathered around." Lynn said their Decorah Street neighborhood was a tight-knit one. "We were very close to all our neighbors," she said. "The Kaisers across the street were like another set of grandparents." Dave and Vivian have traveled to places such as Spain, Portugal, and Hawaii, but Vivian prefers being at home in Dubuque, where they're active members of St. John's Episcopal Church. "There is so much richness here," she said. "So many things to see and do. I even started line dancing." Recent surgeries have slowed Vivian down a bit, but she can't wait to get back on the dance floor and return to her volunteer work at Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital. Lynn said when it came to finding her own life partner, she looked to her parents for inspiration. My mom is a force of nature, while my dad is a little more easygoing, she said. But they were both so involved with all of us and just have such an impressive love for each other. That's what I was looking for, and someone who wanted to be an equal partner with me. When explaining how their partnership has lasted for 56 long years, Dave has a bit of a different answer than Vivian. She doesn't like sports, he said, so she doesn't have a team. And that's why we don't argue. She likes one show, I like another. We think differently, but 1 + 1 = 2. We have similar values, and that value system is key. For Vivian, it's all about faith. Marriage takes 3, she said. It's God, Dave, and me. And turning the page, County Library District touts improvements. Executive Director reports increase in programming, decreased in storage costs. This is from Benjamin Fisher of TH Media. The Dubuque County Library District has requested increases in funding for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2024, but reported significant improvements in services and likely savings. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors is considering requested increases for per capita county funding in cities and countywide for the district, which operates 5 locations around the county. Supervisors also showed appreciation for reforms made by the district, which have contributed to increased use and efficiencies. During a recent budget work session, District Executive Director Amanda Sand reported an increase in programming during the fiscal year, which ended on June 30 of this year, and changes in policy, which should continue. The number of library programs dramatically increased, she said. Reprioritize doing the same programs multiple times, which reduces the total prep time we need. These numbers are not up to our pre-pandemic numbers, but it is still extremely encouraging. Sand said the district also had made better use of existing library positions to more broadly boost awareness of that programming as part of a total assessment of district job descriptions that also increased volunteerism. We changed one of our staff positions into a full-time librarian position, she said. That person is responsible for our community engagement, which includes all of our social media, but also partnerships. One of the things I'm going to talk about a lot, is our priority of building our community connections and bringing in outside organizations. So we had a local musician to come in for story time. We've partnered with the ISU Extension a couple of times now for their distribution of free planting options. There were over 1,000 participants countywide, and we have a lot more regular volunteers coming in. As a part of the district acquiring the state of Iowa's highest library reaccreditation, Sand also said the district was saving money on decreasing stored materials costs by emptying 2 rented storage containers. When we moved out of the Drexler Middle School, we had about 14,000 items that we didn't have a place for, she said. I'm really happy to be no longer paying rent on those storage units. We still purchase approximately 5,000 new items every year, but to maintain our state accreditation, we remove a certain number of materials every year. The library doesn't get magically bigger just because you buy new things. And now we turn the page to news in brief. Police said a Dubuque man fraudulently obtained 4 firearms and pawned 2 of the weapons for cash. Roger S. Cole, Jr., age 40, of 1548 Keel Court, was arrested at 4:05 p.m. Friday at his residence on a warrant charging 3rd-degree theft, 2 counts of 4th-degree theft, and 3 counts of using false information in acquiring a weapon. Court documents state that Cole purchased 1 firearm July 19 and 2 additional firearms July 20 and a 4th firearm July 24, all from a Dubuque retailer. In each of these transactions, Cole was using a checking account with insufficient funds. The total amount of the 3 purchases was $2,468.42. July 21, Cole pawned two of the firearms for $550. Documents state that Cole used an old address when completing a required firearms transaction record form. Information from the form is used in the background check process for obtaining a firearm. Our next in brief. Police say a homeless man set a fire in the detached garage where he was sleeping last month. Kalen L. Erickson, age 40, with no permanent address, was arrested at 11:02 a.m. Saturday at the Dubuque County Jail on a charge of reckless use of fire or explosives. Court documents state that police and firefighters responded on November 10 to a small fire in a detached garage in the alley behind the 1600 block of Iowa Street. Traffic camera footage identified Erickson leaving the scene of the garage. He is currently an inmate in the Dubuque County Jail. He was arrested November 17 on an unrelated warrant charging second-degree theft and on charges of possession of drug paraphernalia and possession of marijuana. Asked about the fire in jail, Erickson told investigating officers that he was homeless and slept in the garage for two nights, lighting a small fire to keep warm. But Erickson did not have permission to sleep in the garage, documents state. Our next brief. These are the top 10 most read stories of the week. These were read on the website from December 11th to Sunday. Number 1, popular noodle chain to open Dubuque location next week. Number 2, trio of affiliated Dubuque boutiques settling in. A new dialysis center opens in Platteville. Number 3, road improvements to accompany new gas station on Dubuque's West End. Number 4, man beats 12-year-old girl with a golf club and strangles wife in Dubuque. Number 5, Dubuque road projects planned for 2024 to bring traffic disruptions. Number 6, Dubuque school board approves next two school year calendars. Number 7, three teens injured in Dubuque County rollover crash. Number 8, chart-topping award-winning country artist set to perform at Great Jones County Fair. Number 9, Earlville woman's decision to start own cleaning business pays off. And number 10, from the Love That Lasts series, after almost 60 years, local couple still makes each other laugh. And our next story from page 2, Hills and Dales Christmas event marks 25 years. Sirens sounding along Dubuque's Davis Street this Sunday before Christmas has become a holiday tradition for the past quarter century. The sirens signified that a convoy of emergency vehicles were escorting Santa, Mrs. Claus, and members of local law enforcement, firefighters, ambulance personnel, and dispatchers on a mission to deliver gifts to residents of Hills and Dales Center on Davis Street. The event, for residents of the facility for individuals with disabilities, marked its 25th year on Sunday. Quote, I think the event has endured all of these years because of our 911 family and how much they give back to the community, said Vicki Leonard, a retired member of the local emergency services community who has organized the event annually. Leonard said, members of Dubuque's emergency services community have become really connected with Hills and Dales. The event has become the true spirit of Christmas, Leonard said. Hills and Dales residents and staff gathered outside the center on Sunday as law enforcement and fire vehicles, with sirens sounding and emergency lights flashing, rolled into the center's parking lot. And then there's a photo of all the emergency vehicles lit up. Quote, for some of the residents who we support, they have received gifts during the event for 25 years now, said Jack Mesher, who is Hills and Dales CEO. So in that way, the event has accompanied a person through a lifetime. For other residents, this might be their first or second year for the event. Mesher said the event has endured because of the Dubuque community's resolve to support people with disabilities. This is a time of year when people want to give and want to reflect on good and gratitude, Mesher said. For many people, this event is that moment for them. Leonard said the event had humble beginnings 25 years ago. When we first came up here to Hills and Dales, we just brought a couple of gifts that we had wrapped on the floor of the dispatch center, he said. The event kept on growing and growing to what it is today. During the past 2.5 decades, current and retired members of the Dubuque area's emergency services have donated more than 4,700 gifts to center residents and donated more than $147,000 to Hills and Dales. This year, the monetary donation was more than $12,000. Quote, "It's the perfect way to kick off the holiday season," said Tom Berger, who is Dubuque County Emergency Management Director and the Fire Chief of Epworth. Berger has participated in the event for most of its 25 years. "I think it's a great project," he said. "It's special for the Hills and Dales residents, and it's special to do this with all the groups of emergency responders together. Everybody looks forward to it." Mary Jane Allgood of Des Moines experienced the event for the first time Sunday. Her 46-year-old son, Jeremy Neswald, has resided at the center for 2 years. "This was fabulous," Allgood said. "The generosity and the kindness is amazing. Our family feels so comfortable that Jeremy has a place where he is cared for at this level." And it shows, as I said, Santa coming down off a fire engine. And then it shows Santa and Mrs. Claus standing next to Jeremy Neswald, age 46, in a wheelchair. And turning the page, we have another section of news in brief. Police said a driver fled the scene of a Dubuque crash in which a boy crossing a street was seriously injured. Kian J. Blaine, age 10, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital for treatment of serious injuries, according to Dubuque police. Police said Blaine was running across University Avenue near Delhi Street at 4:16 p.m. Saturday when he was struck by a vehicle traveling east on University, driven by Andre Perez Lopez, age 29, of Walnut Street. Court documents state that Perez Lopez subsequently drove from the scene. Witness accounts and traffic camera footage identified the vehicle that struck Blaine. Police located the vehicle in the 1100 block of Walnut Street, and Perez Lopez was arrested on a charge of leaving the scene of an injury accident and was cited with no valid driver's license. Next in brief, Dateline St. Olaf. An Iowa farmer who operated an unlicensed custom cattle operation in Clayton County recently entered a plea of guilty to theft and fraud charges in federal court. Michael W. Butikoffer, that's Butikoffer, age 53, of Monona, was convicted Friday on one count of theft of livestock, one count of wire fraud, one count of false bankruptcy declaration, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa. In his plea agreement, Butikoffer admitted he operated a large farming operation outside of St. Olaf, known as Fawn Hollow, and at satellite locations elsewhere in Iowa and Wisconsin. Employees of Butikoffer's organization would raise and care for cattle owned by other individuals. Fawn Hollow then sold the cattle, primarily to a Wisconsin slaughterhouse. The operation was never registered with the USDA, but did participate in the so-called H-2A visa program, recruiting agricultural workers from South Africa to work at Fawn Hollow. The release states that Butikoffer used the proceeds of sales of cattle owned by 6 cattle investors for his own benefit between July 2020 and February 2022. Butikoffer also defrauded the USDA of more than $200,000 in emergency assistance funds designed to assist livestock producers during the COVID-19 pandemic. Butikoffer received more than $1.5 million from the Small Business Administration in February 2022 as part of an application for an economic injury disaster loan. He received $1.5 million and used at least 75 $50,000 of those funds to pay an attorney for services related to a Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding. And our next in brief, University Extension Services in Illinois, Iowa, and Wisconsin will hold their 12th annual Driftless Region Beef Conference next month in Dubuque. The event will be held January 25 and 26 at the Grand River Center, according to a press release. The 2024 conference will focus on efficient and economical forage and beef production. Kim Stackhouse Lawson of Colorado State University will begin the conference with a discussion about sustainability in the beef industry. Other presentations throughout the conference will focus on topics such as bale feeding strategies, forest harvesting, beef market outlooks, feed resources versus herd inventory, and more. Early registration fee, $100 per person, must be received prior to midnight, January 12th. After that, individuals can still register, but the cost will increase to $130. Students receive a $50 registration discount. And City of Dubuque offices will be closed to mark both the Christmas and New Year's Day holidays. Offices will be closed Monday, December 25, and Tuesday, December 26 for the Christmas holiday, and January 1 and 2 for New Year's. Carnegie Stout Public Library will be closed Sunday, December 24 and Monday, December 25, as well as December 31 and January 1. There will be no curbside trash and recycling collections December 31st or January 1. Usual Monday collections will be made on the preceding Saturdays of December 23 and December 30. Jewel Transit will not operate December 25 or January 1, and parking meter violations will not be enforced on those days. The Intermodal Transportation Center will be closed December 25 and 26 and January 1st and 2nd. And Santa's ride on a fire truck through two area communities was postponed by rain, so it's been moved to this week. Santa will visit North Buena Vista at 6 p.m. and Holy Cross at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, December 20. The rides were originally scheduled for Saturday, but were postponed by rain. Elves will be on hand to hand out candy canes along the route. And you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Mary Francis, and all material heard on IRIS is intended solely for people with print disabilities. I am going to jump over to the Sunday paper and see what we've got there. And because we don't read on the weekends, we've got some stuff from the Sunday paper. Police and fire chiefs recommend wage hikes for department leadership. Police and fire chiefs, Dubuque's police and fire chiefs, are recommending wage increases for both departments' higher-ranking staff. The wage increases, which Dubuque City Council members are expected to consider today, Monday, are proposed as a way to reduce parity between the wages of higher-ranking positions and lower ones. Officials say that parity reduces the incentive for police officers and firefighters to accept promotions. If approved, police staff ranked lieutenant, captain, and assistant chief would receive a 5% pay increase, while the police chief would receive a 6% pay increase. A similar pay increase would be applied to the fire department if approved, with the assistant fire marshal receiving a 10% increase, EMS 5%, and the fire chief receiving a 6% increase. The Dubuque City Council would need to approve an additional $119,382 to pay for the requested salary increases in the current fiscal year, though unspent city funds set aside for vacant positions within the fire department and police department could help pay for the increases. Police Chief Jeremy Jensen said higher-ranking staff in his department did not receive increases in fiscal year 2012 and 2016, and in fiscal year 2020, the wage increase those officers did receive was, quote, significantly less than the wage increase given to bargaining sworn members, unquote. This has resulted in officers who received promotions not experiencing an appropriate increase in pay, despite the increased work time and responsibility tied to their new positions, Jensen said. Additionally, higher-ranked officers also are not eligible for overtime pay. It's part of retention, Jensen said. I've got people who want to take promotions, but why would they take on that extra responsibility when the pay increase doesn't match that, he said. Along with requested wage increases, the fire department's proposal also includes upgrading an assistant fire chief position to deputy fire chief, effectively creating a second in command for the fire department. Fire Chief Amy Skeller also proposed the creation of a new civilian fire inspector position that would add $78,000 to the city's annual payroll. Scheller said both of those proposed changes to the administrative structure of the department are intended to bring it more in line with national standards and allow for administrative oversight at the department. It ties into the vision that I have for the organization, she said. City Council member Rick Jones said he believes the wage increases are long overdue, and he plans to support both motions. In many of these positions, a promotion doesn't mean much of a salary bump anymore, he said. This provides a little bit more financial incentive for folks to take those positions. Now we'll turn to the opinion page. And the political cartoon shows Scrooge looking at a newspaper. And the headline is the newspaper is charitable donations down 30%. And he's got a thought bubble that says, "Bah humbug." And behind him stands Bob Cratchit, dressed in rags, with little Tiny Tim on his shoulder, holding a cane. So this opinion is local. This is from the Sunday paper. It's the Hour View from the TH editorial staff. And the title is Credit Card Debt, a Hidden Risk for Consumers. There's plenty to spend money on this time of year. First, there are all those gifts to go under the tree. Then there are the food and beverages for holiday feasts and parties. Throw in some holiday travel, maybe a new outfit, and a few new decor items, and the period between Thanksgiving and New Year's can become a money vacuum. For many Americans, that means the new year will bring a big, fat credit card bill. When that happens, or what happens after, could impact a consumer's financial well-being for the rest of the year. Carrying credit card debt is a quick way to a budgetary disaster. It's a scenario to which many Americans are susceptible. Nearly all, some 82%, of Americans have at least one credit card. During the pandemic, credit card debt dropped for the first time in years. Many people used stimulus checks to pay off bills. But this summer, America got back to its plastic habit, and credit card balances hit a new high, over $1 trillion. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau delivered its biennial update to Congress this fall, highlighting credit that card companies charged consumers more than $105 billion in interest and more than $25 billion in fees. If credit card companies are getting rich, consumers are the ones filling the coffers. Those who pay off their bills every month get an interest-free period until the due date. But that's not the case if you carry a balance. Once debt is carried to the next billing cycle, interest accumulates on a daily basis. Those late fees are the punishment for not paying up on time, even if you are a regular pay-in-full customer. Fees of $25 or higher are common, though there are a few limits to the late fees companies can charge. It will take change at the federal level to address the perils of credit card debt. Legislation must begin with greater clarity on the part of credit card companies, so consumers who don't read the fine print on the back of the application can understand the terms. Many Americans, for instance, don't know whether their credit card rate is fixed or variable. The Fed is considering raising minimum monthly payments so debt would be paid off more quickly. Another consideration is demanding credit card companies provide more information about the cost of making only the minimum payments. How costly is it? American households carry an average of nearly $8,000 in credit card debt. Making minimum payments at least a 20% interest rate That debt would accrue $12,723 in interest, and it would take it 27 years to pay. With no federal limits on late fees or interest rates, consumers need to be extremely cautious. Federal regulators should push for greater protections for credit card holders. Meanwhile, the issue underscores the need for increasing financial literacy among consumers beginning in high school. Last week, Wisconsin joined Iowa in requiring that high school students take a one-semester personal finance course to graduate. The bill was co-sponsored by local legislators State Senator Howard Marklin of a Republican of Spring Green, Representatives Todd Novak, Republican of Dodgeville, and Travis Tranel, a Republican from Cuba City. Iowa's version of the law got slightly watered down last session when lawmakers agreed to allow students to study finance as part of another course instead of taking the semester-long financial literacy class. In Dubuque Community Schools, teens taking two semesters of AP Economics can opt out of the financial literacy course, but studying macroeconomics should not take the place of learning how to live on a budget. At any rate, the move toward educating people from a young age about the importance of managing money prudently is a welcome decision. The perils of carrying credit card debt should be part of that curriculum. And that was Our View editorial from the Telegraph Herald editorial board. And here's a letter to the editor. This comes from Ken Schmidt of Dubuque. I think that it's wonderful that the Northwest Arterial Paving Project won several statewide awards. It's sad that somehow the powers to be must have forgotten to put in a dedicated right turning lane northbound at Kennedy Road. It's the only intersection on the Northwest Arterial without a dedicated turning lane. Everything was in place to accommodate the turning lane at the time of the reconstruction. Had the people in charge constructed the turning lane at the time of the ongoing construction, it would have probably cost an additional couple of $100,000. When they finally figure out that they should have put the turning lane in, we can be sure that the cost will be at least double to triple the amount, not to mention the new traffic disruptions that the construction will incur. But then, whenever it is finished, maybe we'll receive another Metropolitan Paving Program award. In the meantime, at least I have a dedicated turning lane to get into Perkins. And that was from Ken Schmidt of Spring Valley Road in Dubuque. And turning to obituaries from Sunday's TH, Ronald J. Yeager, Sr., age 87, of Key West, Iowa, passed away Thursday, the 14th, at Woodlands Nursing Home in Cedar Rapids. Visitation will be today, Monday, 3 to 7 p.m. at the Leonard Funeral Home on Rockdale Road. A wake service will be held at 2:45 p.m. Massive Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at the St. Joseph Key West Church. Burial will follow at the Mount Olivet Cemetery with military honors. Ronald J. Foley, age 82, Cuba City, formerly of Shellsburg, passed away Sunday, December 10. Visitation, 3 to 7 p.m., Thursday, December 21, at the Erickson Funeral Home in Shellsburg. Massive Christian burial, Friday, December 22, 10 a.m., at St. Matthew's Catholic Church in Shellsburg. Burial will take place at the St. Matthew's Cemetery in Shellsburg. Shirley I. Dack, that's D-A-A-C-K, age 82 of Dubuque, passed away Thursday, November 30th. Celebration of life, Saturday, January 20th, 1 to 6 p.m. at Happy's Place. A time of sharing will be held Saturday, January 20th, same thing, from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Robert H. Maurer, age 88, of Dubuque, passed away Friday, December 15, at the Hawkeye Care Center in Asbury. Prayer service, Thursday, December 21, 3 p.m. at the Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home. So prayer service, 3 p.m., followed by visitation at 7. Massive Christian burial, Friday, December 22nd, 10 a.m. at the St. Anthony Catholic Church. Burial will take place in the Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Michael W. Howald, that's H-W-A-L-D, age 67, of Forreston, Illinois, passed away Tuesday, December 12. Funeral service, Thursday, December 21st, 3 p.m. at the Burke Tubbs Funeral Home in Forreston, Illinois. Visitation will be held following the service from 4 to 7 at the funeral home. Bradley R. Schmidt, age 22, of Henderson, Tennessee, formerly of Dubuque, died Monday, December 11, in an automobile accident. Visitation, 3 to 6 p.m., Wednesday, December 20, at the Eigelhoff, Seigert, and Casper Funeral Home. Next is Jerome D. Heike, that's H-E-I-K-E, age 86, of Platteville. Celebration of Life, Saturday, February 3rd, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the Howden Shield Funeral Home in Cuba City, Wisconsin. Daniel T. Burke, age 81, of Dubuque, passed away December 14th at the Stonehill Health Center. Visitation, Tuesday, December 19, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. There will be a wake at 3:45. Mass of Christian Burial will be Wednesday, December 20th at 10:30 a.m. at the St. Joseph Key West Church. Kennard L. Davids, age 71, of Dubuque, completed his earthly journey December 11th. To honor Kennard's life, a private family service is being held. Neil C. Howell of Maquoketa, age 78, passed away Wednesday, December 13. Celebration of life, Friday, December 22nd, 2 to 4 p.m. at the Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. And going back to the Monday TH, to their editorial page. By the way, there were no obituaries in Monday's TH. This is another other view. This is from Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune. And he writes, Norman Lear's comedy helped diverse Americans tune in to one another. For many of us, old enough to remember Archie Bunker's living room chair before it became a Smithsonian Museum exhibit, Norman Lear helped television comedy get over its fear of real life. Lear, who died December 5 at the age of 101, wrote and produced All in the Family and many other shows that dared to mix political and social commentary with laughs and get away with it, scoring big ratings and armloads of awards along the way. They also gave us memorable TV moments that still have old-timers declaring you had to be there. If you were there, as I was, you might well remember how the 1950s-style monoculture of Ozzie and Harriet, Father Knows Best, and Leave It to Beaver were disrupted by the appearance of All in the Family in 1971. The early days of a decade that had yet to define itself culturally in the wake of the socially and politically turbulent 1960s. The pilot signaled we were about to see something very different. Almost all of the action takes place in the Queen's home of Archie and Edith Bunker, played magnificently by Carol O'Connor and Jean Stapleton, who share their working-class bungalow with their thoroughly 60s-style daughter, Gloria, played by Sally Struthers, and her husband Mike, played by Rob Reiner, whom Archie uncharitably dubs Meathead. Despite Gloria's pleas to Mike before a Sunday brunch after church, promise no fighting with Daddy, okay? Within moments, Mike and Archie get into it. You're going to tell me that a black man has had the same opportunity as you? Mike declares incredulously to Archie. More, he's had more, Archie barks back. I didn't have no million people marching out there to get me my job. No, Edith interjects. His uncle got it for him. Rewatching it on YouTube, I still guffaw over the scene. It was the sort of humor that comes directly from slices of real life that would later be labeled politically incorrect. all in the family soon won renown, as the program, unafraid to laugh at the sort of remarks that in the real world might bring a curtain of uncomfortable silence down over a room, especially in mixed company. In those bygone days of dominance by only three networks, All in the Family sparked the sort of water cooler conversation that in my experience brought more than laughs. It also spawned refreshing discussions, including between me and my mostly white colleagues, about how we really felt about issues, the touchier the better, from which All in the Family drew its material. The show, I thought, helped the country loosen up about sensitive topics. I always felt Lear helped us better live peacefully, and, one hopes, productively with each other, at a time when the nation was becoming more racially, religiously, and politically heterogeneous. It worked because it looked and sounded authentic, a word that seems to take on more meaning with each new generation. Archie Bunker wasn't Lear's only contribution to our national conversation. Good Times would flip Archie's script by focusing on a black family in a high-rise Chicago public housing development that admittedly looked more pleasant than the gritty reality many real-life residents experienced. In the show Maud, Bea Arthur played an opinionated suburban woman who was sort of a feminist version of Archie, and of course, almost inevitably came the Jeffersons, with Sherman Helmsley playing George Jefferson, a self-made black businessman whose endlessly patient wife, Louise, played by Isabel Sanford, and sharp-tongued maid Florence, played by Marla Gibbs, put an upwardly mobile spin on the Bunker-style scenario. Lear said in interviews that he based Archie partly on his own father, who was a salesman and second-generation Russian Jew. Quote, "I grew up in a family very much like those of my characters," he said, according to a tribute from the Television Academy when he was inducted into its Hall of Fame in 1984, a family that lived at the top of its lungs and the end of its nerves. He joined the TV industry in the 50s after serving as a radio operator on B-17 bombers during World War II, on which he flew 52 European missions. In his later days, he became a full-fledged activist, establishing People for the American Way in 1981. That's a nonprofit devoted to democratic ideals, and he stayed active well into his 90s. Unfortunately, our politics today are more polarized than they were even then, as too many of us would rather argue and fight each other than do what Lear's sitcoms portray. Avoid letting the few things that about us that are different overshadow the many things we share in common. And that was from Mr. Page of the Chicago Tribune, and it shows a photograph. All in the Family producer Norman Lear sitting in the middle. He's got Archie and Edith seated in front of him. Rob Reiner behind, along with executive producer Mort Lachman. Caption reminds us that Lear died earlier this month at the age of 101. And finally, in a little bit of time we have, this is from Monday's opinion page, and it's the political cartoon. It shows someone in bed. The headboard is marked Congress. The person is sleeping, and then it says Ghost of Europe Future, and a ghost of the future with skeleton hands is standing there saying, Putin took Ukraine, and now he's on Poland's doorstep. And the thought bubble above the person in the Congress bed is a giant Z as they sleep through it. And time to squeeze one more little article in. Wisconsin man and daughter find possible remains of a ship. Dateline Green Bay. Wisconsin archaeologists are crediting a man and his daughter with discovering the remains of what could be a ship that ran aground during the deadly Peshtigo Fire more than 150 years ago. Tim Wallach and his 6-year-old daughter, Henley of Peshtigo, were fishing on Lake Michigan in the Bay of Green Bay near Green Island in August when their sonar picked up something that Henley thought was an octopus. Wallach posted photos of the sonar images on Facebook it eventually drew the attention of the Wisconsin Historical Society. The Society posted a note Monday on Facebook saying that an underwater remote vehicle surveyed the site December 4th, and they confirmed that the object is the wreck of a 3-masted sailing ship that was submerged in 8 to 10 feet of water. Archaeologists believe the ship may be the 122-foot-long George L. Newman ship. It was hauling lumber from Little Suamico October 8, 1871, when it became enveloped in thick smoke from the Peshtigo fire and it ran aground. The keeper of the island's lighthouse rescued the crew, but the ship was abandoned, eventually covered with sand and forgotten. The Historical Society plans to survey the wreck again in the spring and may push to list the site on the National Register of Historic Places. And that's all the time we have today for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, December 18th, 2023. I've been your reader, Mary Frances. We did a little bit of Monday news, and we did some stuff from the Sunday edition as well. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We're so glad to have you listening. Have a great day.